Hello, and welcome to the audio edition of Beastly Business, the first in a series of animal behavior, human-animal bond mysteries, written and read by Myrna Milani. Chapter 18. In 1903, Max von Stefanetz designed a series of temperament and physical soundness tests to identify worthy animals in an effort to eliminate what he considered the negative effects of indiscriminate breeding in his beloved breed, the German Shepherd dog. Over time, other tests to ascertain the dog's value for police and military work further expanded the assessment process. Ultimately, the fulfillment of the test took on a competitive quality and Schutzhund, protection dog, became a sport enjoyed worldwide. Although originally conceived by Stefanetz to perpetuate the highest standards of the German Shepherd breed, any dog meeting the physical and mental requirements of the sport could now participate in it. However, that day as I sat at my kitchen table with a cup of tea, Schutzhund training intrigued me far more than its history. Here's the deal. I explained to the pets to solidify the pertinent facts in my own mind. The training consists of three phases, tracking, obedience, and protection. To pass the first phase, the dog must locate three objects no bigger than a wallet placed by a stranger a minimum of 1 hour previously. In phase two, the dog performs all the routine obedience commands, plus retrieves a dumbbell from the opposite side of a meter-high brush hurdle and a 1.8-meter-high inclined wall. Can you guys do that? Maddie donned his most condescending, "Surely you're joking, why in the world would I want to?" expression, while Teresa yawned and Elizabeth chewed her rubber bone. The third phase, protection, involves the owner, a helper, and the dog, and it's the most controversial. You ready for this? Something in my tone caused all three quadrupeds to look at me when I began describing this part of the training. First, the dog must block the escape of the helper by firmly gripping that person's protectively padded arm when commanded by the owner. Next, the helper moves toward the dog, hits the animal with a padded stick, and the dog must attack the helper without any further command. Finally, I raised my voice slightly when I noticed my animal audience's attention wandering. The helper moves 50 paces ahead of dog and owner and suddenly turns and attacks the owner without warning. Once again, the dog must attack without any command. Very interesting sport, I concluded to Elizabeth, who rolled over on her back with a happy sigh and fell sound asleep. Even more interesting, though, was the name of the temperament test a dog had to pass to compete for a Schutzhund title, the Beglethundi. Well, I patted Maddie, who suddenly materialized in my lap, I guess that means we need to find out if Douglas DeWitt is Nick Cooper's prize student. The cat stretched upward until he rubbed the top of his head against the bottom of my chin and tickled me with his whiskers. I knew you'd understand. I laughed and put him down on the floor. Later, I asked myself why, considering all that had happened, I just opened the door when somebody knocked, rather than ascertaining the knocker's identity. Ultimately, I decided I opened it because that's what I always did, and because Maddie's antics distracted me. Nonetheless, when I saw Jeff Weintraub standing there, I wished I'd acted more prudently. Weintraub took one look at the dog standing behind me and roughly yanked me outside and slammed the door before either animals or I had time to react.
"You and I have some unfinished business to settle," he snarled.
"Such as?" I struggled to project a degree of confidence I didn't even remotely feel as I tried to pull away from him.
"Such as something that happened to Monica that you didn't mention to the cops."
He tightened his already very tight grip on my wrist. "If I didn't mention it before, why would I know?"
"Maybe you didn't want the cops to know you were snooping around the cottage for some reason."
He pulled me so close, the scent of cigarettes and coffee on his breath nauseated me.
"Or maybe you think you know something you could hold over my head." I don't know what you're talking about. You want to play dumb? Go ahead.
He tightened his grip on my arm enough to bring tears to my eyes. Just remember, I have something of yours that could cost you a hell of a lot more than I could lose.
Don't you think you're in enough trouble already?
I countered in an effort to gain more control of the situation.
He looked at me almost pityingly.
According to my lawyer, a previously law-abiding guy like me having a midlife crisis who got sucked in by a bimbo like Monica will get a few years probation at most.
Before I could reply, his mood shifted dramatically. Mess with me, bitch, and you can kiss your comfy little life in the sticks goodbye.
He gave an ugly laugh, shoved me forcefully to one side, and swaggered down my front walk as if he owned it. I sat at the kitchen table holding Elizabeth for several minutes until I stopped trembling enough to think. After much deliberation, I finally came to a solid conclusion, which I shared with the pets. I'm in deep doo-doo. No two ways about it. I weighed my options and decided only one viable one existed. After taking a deep breath to quiet my still fluttery hands, I fired up the computer and broke my rule about sending potentially incriminating emails. Do you know where I can hire a really good burglar? I addressed it and shot it into the void, then turned my attention to Douglas DeWitt. But before I could crystallize my thoughts regarding how to learn more about him, the phone rang.
Are you crazy?
McCarthy, why are you calling me? I specifically emailed you so I wouldn't have to listen to another of your lectures.
I informed him coolly. Just tell me the answer and go away.
You're serious, aren't you? Even though I couldn't see it, I knew his left eyebrow was raised in astonishment.
Of course I am. You think I'd joke about something like that?
Didn't anyone ever tell you not to email anything you wouldn't shout in the streets?
Not that I recall.
I lied.
I can't imagine why they would. Besides, there are extenuating circumstances involved here.
Meet me at the Somerset Diner in half an hour. He sighed. Before I could protest, he hung up. A half hour later, I listlessly examined the plebeian collection of marigolds and zinnias in front of the diner, while I mentally kicked myself for my inept handling of the situation.
Let's go inside.
McCarthy's voice and sudden appearance caused me to almost jump out of my clogs.
Can't you just walk up to someone like a normal person?
I reproached him as I willed my heart to slow down and ignore those damn blue eyes of his.
I did. It's not my fault those plants so entranced you. You didn't see me.
Those plants didn't entrance me. They're marigolds and zinnias, for heaven's sakes. He looked from me to the plants, shook his head, and pointed to the door.
Why do you want to hire a burglar? He demanded as soon as the waitress served our coffee and disappeared.
I told him about Weintraub's visit.
You think he's telling the truth?
McCarthy began quizzing me the instant I finished.
About taking the sample from me and that piece of my shirt?
Yes.
About having the know-how how to use it against me?
I don't know.
I looked across the booth at him levelly. Do you?
He alternated between stirring his coffee and staring out the window until I decided he had no intention of answering.
He could probably do it if he set his mind to it, he answered just as I gave up on him.
Thanks for the reassurance. Guess I'll go home and bake some cookies while I'm waiting for him to frame me.
Good idea.
My taciturn partner nodded, sliding out of the booth. At least the cookie part. I'll handle the rest of it. And before I could question him further, he disappeared, leaving me to pay the check. By the time I arrived home, I'd had my fill of the criminal element, and I wasn't feeling that great about real or quasi members of the law enforcement community either. However, the fact that both Jeff Weintraub and his dog had provided me with concrete evidence of their violent potential heightened my resolve to learn more about my other canine suspects. For the second time that day, I picked up the phone and called Nick Cooper.
This time I gave him a plausible story about my desire to learn more about Schutzhund, and arranged to meet him the first thing the next morning. The man was an ex-biker who trained attack dogs. What could possibly go wrong? You've been listening to an excerpt from Beastly Business, an animal behavior and human-animal bond mystery written by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, books on animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavioral and bond sites, check out my website at mm@mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the book Beastly Business in any form are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music in The Steppes of Central Asia by Alexander Bordin is used with permission of Katova Arts, www.katova.com.